Record 33. No time for contents. Last note. This day has arrived. Get the paper quick. Maybe it's there. I read the paper with my eyes. That's no mistake. My eyes are like a pen now, or a calculator. Something you hold in your hand. Something you feel is not you. A tool. There it is in big, bright, all across page one. The enemies of happiness are not asleep. Hold on to happiness with both hands. Work will be suspended tomorrow. All numbers will report for the operation. Those not in compliance will be subject to the machine of the benefactor. Tomorrow? Is there really going to be some kind of tomorrow? By force of daily inertia, I extended my hand, a tool, to the bookshelf, and inserted today's gazette into the gold embossed binder along with the others. Halfway to the shelf, I think, how come? What difference does it make? I'm never coming back to this room, not ever again. And the paper falls out of my hand onto the floor, and I stand up and look around the room. Every square centimetre of it, quickly gathering stuff up, feverishly jamming it into some invisible suitcase. Everything I'd be sorry to leave behind. Table, books, chair. That's the chair I-330 sat in that time with me down there on the floor, the bed. Another minute passes. Two. Maybe I'm waiting for some stupid miracle. The telephone will ring, maybe, and she'll say that. No, there isn't any miracle. I'm leaving for the unknown. These are my last lines. Farewell to you, my unknown, my dear readers, with whom I've lived through so many pages, to whom when I came down with soul, I revealed all of myself, right down to the last pulverized screw, the last busted spring. I'm leaving. Record 34. Those on leave. A sunny night. Radio Valkyrie. Oh, if only I had really smashed myself and everyone into smithereens. If only I had really turned up with her somewhere on the other side of the wall, among beasts bearing their yellow tusks. If only I really had never come back there, back here. It would have been 1,000,000,000 times easier. And now what? Go and strangle that. But what good would that do? No, no, no. Get hold of yourself. D-503. Line yourself up on a strong logical axis. Even if it won't be for long, bear down on the lever with all your weight. And, like an ancient slave, keep on turning the millstones of syllogisms until you've written, thought through everything that's happened. When I boarded the Integral, everyone had already assembled, each in his place, and all the honeycombs of the gigantic glass beehive were filled. Down below, through the glass decks, one could see tiny ant-like people beside the telegraphs, dynamos, transformers, altimeters, valves, dial pointers, engine pumps and pipes. In the ward room, where some types leaning over tables and instruments, no doubt on assignments from the Scientific Bureau. Next to them was the second builder with two of his assistants. These three all had their heads reacted into their shoulders like turtles, their faces grey, autumnal, dim. "Well, how goes it?" I asked. "Oh, fairly grim," one of them answered with a dim grey smile. "No telling where we might have to land. In general, there's no telling." I couldn't bear to look at them, to look at men whom I would in an hour's time with these very hands cast out forever from the cozy figures of the table of hours, whom I would tear away forever from the maternal beat breast of one state. They reminded me of the tragic figures of the three on leave, a story known to every schoolboy. This story tells of how three numbers, as an experiment, were given leave from work for a whole month. Do as you like, go where you like. The poor things hung around the place where they usually worked and kept on looking inside with starved eyes. They would dawdle around the square, and for hours at a stretch they would go through the motions that their organisms had begun to require every day at a certain time. They would soar and play in the air, bang invisible hammers, clobber crude castings of iron that no one could see. After 10 days of this, they finally couldn't take it any longer. They all joined hands, went into the water, and in step with the march, went in deeper and deeper until the water put an end to their torment. I repeat, it was painful for me to look at them. I was in a hurry to get away. I'll just check in on the machine room, I said, and then we're on the way. They were asking me about this and that and what voltages to set off for the blast off, how much water ballast was needed for the aft tank. There was a sort of phonograph in me that answered all questions quickly and precisely, while on the inside I never ceased to concentrate on my own business. And suddenly, in a narrow little gangway, one thing got to me there inside, and that was in fact the moment from which it all started. Grey yunnies, grey faces were passing by in the narrow little gangway when, for 1 second, one stood out, tousled hair, low on a forehead above deep-set eyes. Him. I understood. They were here. And there was nowhere I could go to escape from all that. And there were only minutes left, a handful of minutes. There began an infinitesimal molecular trembling throughout my body. From that point to the very end, it never left me, as though a huge motor had been turned on and the structure of my body was too tight to bear it, and all the walls, partitions, cables, girders, lights, everything was trembling. I still don't know whether she's here, but there's no time now. They've sent for me to come up to the bridge at once. It's time for takeoff. Takeoff to where? Grey, dim faces, down below on the water, tense blue veins, ponderous, cast iron layers of sky, and my hand seems made of cast iron when I lift the command phone. Lift off, 45 degrees. Dull explosion, jolt, aft, a green and white mountain of water goes berserk, deck, soft and spongy. Vanishes beneath the feet, and everything below, all of life forever. In 1 second, everything around shrank as we fell into a sort of funnel, the icy blue convex cityscape, the round bubbles of the cupolas, the lonely leaden finger of the accumulator tower. Then a momentary curtain of cotton wadding clouds through it, and the sun was shining in the blue sky. Seconds, minutes, miles, and the blue was quickly becoming firm and suffused with darkness. The stars were emerging like drops of cold silver sweat. And here it was, the anxious, unbearably bright, black, starry, sunny night. It was how it might be if you suddenly went deaf. You can still see the trumpets blaring, but you only see them. The trumpets are mute. There's only silence. That's how the sun was, mute. This was natural. This was to be expected. We'd left the Earth's atmosphere, but it somehow happened so quickly, so abruptly, that everyone suddenly turned shy and got quiet. But as for me, I somehow felt even easier under this fantastic mute sun, as though I had done with cringing. I had crossed some unavoidable threshold, leaving my body down there somewhere while I was speeding in a new world where you expected everything to be unprecedented, upside down. "Hold this heading," I shouted into the intercom. Or rather, this shout came from the phonograph in me, and the same phonograph with a mechanical hinged movement handed the intercom phone to the second builder. And I, my whole body covered with this thin molecular trembling that only I knew about, headed down below, looking for the door to the ward room, the very one in an hour from now it would slam shut and lock tight. Next to the door was someone I didn't know, shortish, with a face you'd never pick out of a big crowd, with one unusual feature. His arms were uncommonly long and reached to his knees, looked as though they'd been taken by mistake from a different set of human parts. One of these long arms reached out and barred the door. "Where are you going?" I could see he didn't know that I knew everything. But so what? Maybe it's better that way. I drew myself up to my full height and said, with deliberate bluntness, "I am the builder of the integral. I'm in charge of the tests. You understand?" The arm vanished. The ward room, heads bent over the instruments and maps, some of them sprouting a grey bristle, others yellow, bold, ripe. I gather them all into a bunch with one quick glance and head back along the gangway, down the companionway, to the engine room. There, pipes that were glowing from the explosions gave off heat and racket. Glistening levers were going through a desperate, drunken dance, and the dial pointers never for a moment ceased their barely perceptible trembling. Finally, at the tachometer, him, the one with the overhanging brow, bent over a notebook. "Listen," I had to shout over the racket right into his ear. "She's here. Where is she?" There was a smile in the shadow under his brow. "Her, over there, in the radio room." I go there. I find three of them, all of them in winged headphone helmets. She looked a head taller than usual, winged, gleaming, flying like one of the ancient Valkyries, and there seemed to be huge blue sparks overhead on the radio antenna. This came from her, and so did the faint whiff of ozone, lightning. "Could someone, or you," I said, speaking to her and panting from running, "could you take a transmission back to Earth, to the hangar? Come with me, I'll dictate it." Next to the equipment room was a small cabin, the size of a drawer. We sat at the desk next to each other. I found her hand and pressed it. "Well, what do we do now?" "I don't know. Do you have any idea how marvellous this is? Just to fly, not knowing, no matter where, and soon it'll be 1200 hours, and no one knows what. And tonight, where will we be tonight, you and I? On the grass, maybe? On dry leaves?" Blue sparks from her, and the scent of lightning, and my trembling gets faster and faster. "Take this down," I say to her in a loud voice, still panting from running. "Time, 11:30 hours. Speed, 6800. From beneath her winged helmet, keeping her eyes on the paper, she says quietly, "She came to me last night with your note. I know everything, be quiet. But her baby, it's yours, right? So I sent her. She's there, already, on the other side of the wall. She's going to live." I'm back on the bridge. back with the insane night of black star-studded sky and blinding sun, back with the crippled hand of the clock on the wall slowly going from minute to minute, and everything clothed in a fog of infinitely fine but all imperceptible trembling known to me alone. Why I don't know, but it struck me that it would be better for all this to take place not here but somewhere down there, close to the earth. "Stop engines," I shouted into the intercom, still moving forward by inertia, but slower, slower. Then the integral snagged on some hairbreadth second of time, hung for an instant motionless till the hair snapped and the integral dropped downward faster and faster like a stone. Thus, silently for minutes, for dozens of minutes, my pulse audible, the minute hand before my eyes nearer and nearer to 12, and I saw that I was the stone, that I-330 was the earth, that I was a stone thrown by someone, and that the stone had an intolerable need to fall, to smash into the earth, into a thousand fragments. But what if below you could already see the firm blue smoke of clouds? But what if? But the photograph inside me, with the smooth precision of a hinge, grabbed the phone and gave the order. Ahead, slow. The stone stopped falling. Now only the four lower engines, two aft and two forward, were wearily panting, just enough to counter the integral's weight, and the integral, barely trembling as though riding an anchor, stood still in the air, some bare kilometre from the earth. Everyone spilled out onto the deck. The 12 o'clock mealtime bell was due, and, leaning over the glass railing, drank in great hurried gulps, the unknown world down there, beyond the wall, amber, green, blue, and the woods in autumn, meadows, a lake. At the edge of the blue saucer were some yellow ruins, like bones, from which a dried yellow finger rose menacingly, the steeple of an ancient church, probably, that had survived by a miracle. "Look, look, over there, to the right." There across the green desert, a quickly moving spot flew like a brown shadow. Mechanically, I moved the binoculars in my hands to my eyes. Chest high in the grass, a herd of brown horses galloped, their tails flying. On their backs were those creatures, dark, bay, white, black. A voice behind me. "But I tell you, I saw it, a face." "Go on, tell that to someone else." "Well, here, you take the binoculars." But they'd already vanished, endless green desert. And in the desert, filling all of it, and me and everyone, the piercing vibration of the bell. Mealtime in 1 minute. At 12. Instantly the world scattered in disconnected bits. Someone's resonant golden badge lay on the steps, and it meant nothing to me. It crunched beneath my heel. A voice. "But I tell you, it was a face." A dark rectangle, open door to the wardroom. White teeth clenched in a sharp smile. And at that moment, when the clock began to strike with infinite slowness, not breathing between one stroke and another, and the lines in front had already begun to move, the rectangle of the door was suddenly barred by two familiar, unnaturally long arms. "Halt!" Fingers dug into my palm. This was I-330, who was next to me. "Who's this? Do you know him?" "Isn't? But isn't he?" Now he was on someone's shoulders. Above the hundreds of faces, his face, the face of hundreds and thousands, but uniquely his. "In the name of the guardians, those to whom I'm speaking are listening. Each one of them is listening. And what I'm telling you is this. We know. We don't know your numbers yet, but we know everything. The integral will not be yours. The test flight will be carried out to the end. And as for you, you dare not make a move. You will carry it out with your own hands. And then, but we've finished. But I've finished. Silence. The glass paving beneath my feet was soft, quilted, and my feet were soft and quilted. Next to me, an absolutely white smile, frantic blue sparks, into my ear, through her teeth. So it was you. You did your duty. Well, so be it. Her hand tore out of mine, and the Valkyrie helmet with its angry wings was already far ahead of me. Frozen silent like all the others, I walk alone into the wardroom. But it wasn't me. It wasn't. I told no one about this. No one except though these mute white pages. Include myself. Inside myself I was screaming this at her. This desperate, loud, inaudible scream. She was sitting opposite me across the table and not once did her eyes brush me. Seated beside her was someone's ripe yellow bald spot. I could hear I-330 talking. Nobility. But what? But my dear professor, a simple philosophical analysis of this word shows that it is a prejudice, a survival from ancient feudal epochs. But we... I felt myself turning pale, and in a moment everyone would see this. But the internal phonograph counted off the 50 statutory chews for each morsel. I locked myself inside myself, as in an ancient, opaque house. I blocked my door with rocks. I closed the drapes. Then the command phone was in my hands, and flight in frozen final misery, through dark clouds into the night of sun and stars, minutes, hours, and evidently inside me all this time, feverishly, at full speed, unheard even by me, the logical motor had been running, because all of a sudden, at some point in blue space, I saw my desk and above it, the gill-like cheeks of you. On it, a forgotten sheet of my records, and I saw it all clearly. Nobody but her. I saw it all. Oh, if only I could make it to the radio, winged helmets, the smell of blue. I remember I was talking to her in a loud voice about something, and I remember how she looked straight through me as if I were glass and said, absently, I'm busy. I'm getting a transmission from below. You can dictate yours to her over there. In a tiny box of the cabin, I thought for a second and dictated in a firm voice. Time, 14:40. Prepare for landing. Stop all engines. It's all over. Bridge. The mechanical heart of the integral has stopped. We're falling. But my own heart can't fall fast enough. Keeps lagging. Rises higher in my throat. Clouds. And then in the distance a green spot. Greener. More and more clear. Rushes whirling at us. This is the end. The porcelain white, distorted face of the second builder. It was probably him who shoved me with all of his might. I hit my head against something, and just as I was falling, going dark, I vaguely heard, aft engines, a head full. There was a sharp leap upward. That's all I remember.